They say, used to say, if you go to America, it was the American dream.
Now we see Dubai as the Dubai dream.
It's not even the Dubai dream. Dubai's awake, my friend. It's not sleeping like the rest of the world.
Parasites exist everywhere. Worms exist everywhere. Your kid goes to school, you know, they ruffle the hair, they've got dogs walking around. Worms, we decompose. When we go to the earth, we decompose. Some are beneficial, some are obviously aggressive. You know your lovely $500 Wagyu steak? That's medium rare. It's got a good amount of hookworms in it. Beautiful. When you wake up, before you turn on the coffee machine, 750 mils of water, hydration powder.
750.
750.
In the morning. Just for that morning.
Yep. You will not understand what that does for your system. It is ridiculous. It's like taking a petrified sponge that lives outside and then putting it in water and seeing it live. Eggs, steak, veggies. First thing in the morning, come talk to me. Beef mince, if it's easier. Steak with a nice piece of fat on it. Come show me your blood work in a couple of weeks and tell me what your energy's like after just doing that.
All right, we're here with another podcast episode in Dubai Catch, and it's a pleasure to have Raymond Berger
here with me.
Absolutely, I met you in the gym the first time I met you, and I always say I let the guests introduce themselves, so I'll leave the mic to you.
Well, it's good to meet in the gym because they do say that no good story ever starts with a salad, but it can in the gym, naturally. So thank you for having me. It's a super condensed version today. I apologize. Obviously, my gyrocopter in my head doesn't work very well, so we got a little bit lost, but thanks for having us. In any case, thanks for having me. To keep it brief, long story short, I've been in Dubai for about 10 years now, and I like to say that there's been previous versions of myself. There's been 0.5, there's been 0.1, there's been... It's incomprehensible, but I reckon my 1.0 got discovered while being in Dubai. So coming down from a very small town, starting up my studies and being pretty much the only person having left the community that I come from, coming out to Dubai and starting out as a personal trainer, really, while getting my medical situations all sorted out. It was a change of pace, and it was something that definitely defined what was going forward. So for me, I'm a bodybuilder, and very avid fitness. I love it, but not so much in the way that I like to throw everything on social media. But I believe that the human body itself is to be developed as well as the mind and the soul. So we came out here trying to do just that, and it's been very, very progressive since. So right now I'm working as a clinician for the company that we are running at the moment called Vital Element, where it's a holistic approach to finding out where health begins and how we can get you to move further through that for your own self.
You said you were a blood chemistry analyst. Mm. What does that mean?
Well, pathology. So the interesting thing about blood work is it's so defined by statures and by reference ranges, but what people don't realize is your blood references are designed according to thousands upon thousands of people's average blood levels. Now, you being a fitness enthusiast yourself, how could you be, you know, compared to somebody who's sitting on a couch eating Doritos and has a body outline of Cheeto dust next to their butt instead of you busting your butt in the gym itself? So reference ranges, I realized, were completely inaccurate when it comes to seeing somebody's true health aspect. It is just that, a reference range. Unfortunately, these days people see it as gospel, and that doesn't give a very picturesque, you know, aspect of someone's health and where they really are. So blood chemistry analyst is somebody who digs deep and looks at the pathology. Doesn't just look at, say, oh, cholesterol slightly elevated, this and that. No, what does that lead to? What cascade is that causing? Where did this begin? So instead of just taking it for face value in terms of blood work and then working from there, we look at where you've been. We look at what has led you to this point and then where you can turn the corner in terms of improving the whole picture. So it's a very, very big difference between just taking it for face value and really analyzing it and looking and be like, wow, I need to go here to improve this. So that's what I do. I create the new blueprint and we say, cool, this was a reference range, but this is you as an individual. So the pathology of that and analyzing that is what gives you that exact picture.
So when you tell me a journey of a customer, for example, you have my blood test. Mm. How do you go about it exactly understanding the meaning behind those blood tests?
Okay, so we've got the raw blood work that gets done by the lab of your choice, or we do the lab ourselves. And I already have a little bit of a picture. So for me, I'm on the spectrum. So for me, a lot of, you know, things make sense that don't make sense to others. So my way of looking at things paints pictures as soon as I see this raw blood work. And I kind of triage this, right? Okay, this person, okay, this is not an hereditary condition. This is based on lifestyle. Where has this person been for the last 5 years? So before I even, quote unquote, use software, which I do not like doing, I've already created a profile. So I'll go sit down with that patient and I'll have questions that already are formulated in my mind and ask them and complete that before I actually even look at the blood work. Because if we look at the numbers instead, we dismiss the person. If we take in the person, we can add the numbers to that equation, which gives us a more accurate picture in the end. So once that's determined, once we know where they've been, where they're going, and more importantly, where they want to go, we can design a protocol that fits them from beginning to end, generally starting with fixing the gut, which is the second brain. Your main production of serotonin, which is the neurotransmitter responsible for feeling happy and feeling motivated, irrespective of dopamine, is produced in the gut.
And so you think that everything that happens in the gut really affects your emotions?
Directly. I would go as far as saying that it is one of the truest facts. In every sort of religion that we know of today, whether it's Western, Eastern, it's mentioned in the various texts that your body is a temple, that your stomach, what you consume, is directly correlated to your current state. So yes, 100%. And it takes time to reverse that. And we are unfortunately a species these days that rely on timelines, but the body and healing is not linear. So we have to figure out what each person needs to do.
So tell me more about the gut health exactly.
Okay, so we've got amazing modern medicine available. Like I'm saying that everything we need is there, which inherently has made us lazy. So we pretty much chuck the proverbial nuclear warhead at the ant colony instead of just going in and looking at the ant colony. There's because we've got a status quo that we follow. Take this antibiotic, you got a sniffle. Take this antibiotic, your stomach is rough. Take this antibiotic, you got a skin infection. Before the end of that, you have destroyed valuable microbiomes. There are more bacterial flora in your stomach than there are stars in the galaxy. Your bacteria dictates everything from signaling down to your rest and restoration down to performance.
So you're saying antibiotic really kills the benefit?
It kills everything within the gut. Everything within the gut. And there's so much controversy surrounding the basic aspects of, do I take a probiotic on cycle of antibiotics or do I wait until afterwards? Then we put it this way. If we have negative bacteria influencing various processes and we feed a probiotic, pro meaning, gain, biotic meaning biota, which is the bacteria, you end up feeding positive and negative. And in this state, your gut's already hostile. So the negative bacteria will be grown a lot faster than the positive. So you just end up imbalancing yourself. So we have to play that very carefully. We notice a lot of people coming to us with depression. And a lot of that is stemming from a permeable gut lining, a microbiome that is ruined. I can't lose weight. I can't sleep. I can't wake up in the morning. We tell people, just sit down. You're going to do this. We're not going to tell you immediately what it will bring. You report to us. You tell us. So we take the confirmation bias away. But the gut itself is the second brain. If I had to say it myself, it's the first brain. You follow your gut, right?
So most of the diseases that are occurring in human beings come from the gut?
Especially now. With the fact that everything is processed, we're impatient. We're really impatient. Like everyone's freaking out because they have to put a packet of 2-minute noodles in the microwave and they're still checking their watch. Come on, it's taking too long. So in a world of instant gratification, we have sought ways to get things done faster, thereby bypassing natural processes in the stomach that are meant to break things down, meant to feed the gut slowly. But we're jumping on powders, we're jumping on potions, which have their place. But if you look at the word, the etymology of the word supplement, it is to replace what is not being achieved through natural means of dietitian. Okay.
Acts like a supplement.
Correct.
It's the name supplement.
Correct.
Supplements your meal.
Correct. But now we're seeing it as, oh, cool. I've got this supplement. I don't need to do this. Instant gratification. And with that comes negative health. Your gut's not meant to break down things that you're not able to pronounce when you read it on the back of a packet. It wasn't around 100 years ago. It's not food now, in my opinion.
So what do you think that people are mostly avoiding, or how do you restore that gut health that we have as human? Like, what would you say the common steps that someone should take to restore their gut health?
Strangest thing is, man, drink more water. Like it's so simple, but we everything, enzymatic approaches, stomach acid is all balanced by H2O. But beyond that is people aren't listening to their gut anymore. They're not listening to the reactions that they're getting from food. They're seeing convenience as, you know, which is, I can respect. I can honestly respect. I'm speaking strictly in a metropolitan aspect now, because people in third world countries, even though they don't have money, have got better health than we do in the Western world. 100%. 100%.
Is it because of the avoidance of processed food?
That's namely one of them. Secondly is everything comes from the land. And number three, they don't have the environmental stresses added to us. Primary causes of diabetes or leading on to onset diabetes these days is not just found in the food we consume, but the air we breathe. I mean, if you look at, without naming too many places, city spaces, the index for the PM2.5s, which is petrochemicals, are leading it to a direct impact on pancreatic health, which is affecting diabetes directly. So you could be rectifying these situations in a nutritional aspect, taking your medication, but the air you're breathing is going to strongly contribute to those systems. And that is where the gut comes in.
So what do you do? What do you do in this case when you're stuck in a place that maybe can be polluted? So
you work with what you've got. And that's the problem, because people see an article in the magazines. Remember when we discussed social media or just general, they feel like they're going to fail unless they're able to execute on all of the above. So people are giving up. They are completely just discontinuing any effort. And we have to kind of sit with them and be like, hold on. You're talking about the 15 things you cannot action, but here's 10 things that you can that you're currently not doing. So actioning gut health is one of the biggest defenses that you could actually, you know, sort of do. And it's very simply done by just sitting down, realizing that you need to eat cleaner, you need to drink your water, you need to exercise, but starting small, not with 6-minute abs and 10-minute Jane Fonda workouts that just do not work. What works for you?
So you started out as a personal trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And with the avid bodybuilder vision, you know, to build your body, how did that get you into really understanding all about gut health and everything?
That's the $10 million question. So I've competed in a bunch of shows, and we all know that bodybuilding can be healthy, but on a competitive level, I don't care if your name is Johnny, Luke, Martha, May, John, it is not healthy. Anything where you have to take the extremes and fight against your physiology in order to achieve a certain, you know, look is not healthy in some way, shape, or level. It's even been determined now that natural bodybuilding to the extremes on competitive nature is more unhealthy than enhanced bodybuilding, based on the fact that you're not supporting those systems, i.e. supplementing. I don't advocate jumping on hormones. I don't advocate an unhealthy lifestyle. But at the end of the day, when you have to take your body to that level, there's damage that's done. So I had a look at my own blood chemistry. I had a lot of knowledge already about biology, but for some reason, I could not determine what was wrong with me.
What was wrong with you?
Just everything, man. I was a walking bag of tricks after having done a bunch of shows and just gone from show to show, exercising what I thought was, you know, moderation, healthy food, training well, resting. You don't. When you have to augment your natural processes. You cannot expect, a system that's been created by God, it cannot be augmented by us. We think we can, but we really cannot. And the numbers don't lie. So I got really sick. I developed onset autoimmune disease where I would walk in Mall of the Emirates. My wife will tell you it was the weirdest thing. I'd walk. I was jacked, man, chiseled, like looked like you could, like grate cheese on my stomach. Like it was ridiculous. But I was walking with groceries and boop, I threw the bags. Literally a central nervous system malfunction to the point where I was losing control of my motor functions. And this was 6 weeks out from show. Every time I got to stage, I would develop severe bronchitis where I would basically cough up lung tissue. So long story short, I met with a mentor who initially was incredible, but I realized he was doing a lot of things that he wasn't meant to be doing, taking the trust of the people and sort of pushing a lot of supplements, as you and I have discussed briefly, on these people and protocols on them and giving them hope, using huge jargon, massive words in order to instill obedience. And these people were getting ripped massively for their time, their money, and their effort. Now, people that are fragile, people that are sick, people that are unhealthy are going to listen because they want to really change. So as the practitioner, you've got a lot of power in that sense. It's up to you to exercise the right power at that point to help them heal, not to benefit yourself. So he was doing that, and I found out through that and basically eliminated him from the equation. I saw meeting him as being very serendipitous, and I continued from where he left off, except I refined his processes and made it about, I don't want to sound holier than thou, but the greater good. And that has been, when you ask me, like, why is advertising not something for you? It's because it hasn't been necessary. I entered this with the thought of bettering people, bettering myself, learning along the way, and then I knew everything else would take care of itself, and it has.
It's interesting that we had this discussion before about using social media to advertise for clients and generate leads, but you were the one who was doing it more offline, more of word of mouth. What made you decide that I'm going to stick with this no matter what and avoid social media as much as possible?
If we look at the brass contrast between, say, known human civilization, we've been speaking to each other for thousands of years. It doesn't matter which country you're from, what belief you have, who you know, what you've gone through. Everyone has spoken to each other, as you and I are now, face to face, for eons. Social media, text and writing, has been along for maybe a fraction of the time. Earliest writings was in Mesopotamia, and that was 6,500 years ago. So human civilization has been talking for over 10,000 years, I mean, before we can even know. So long story short, this is what we are programmed to do. Social media, text, and those type of things do not hold attention anymore. We've gone from 15-minute videos being valuable on YouTube to 5-minute excerpts to 1 minute. Now we've got 15-second shorts. Can you see where this is going?
Short attention span.
100%. And with short attention span comes short sort of application of what you're meant to do in order to heal yourself. So when I'm sitting with someone, I can sit with them and I can speak to them, look them in the eye and be like, right, you're heading for XYZ. If we don't jump on ABC, you're not going to be well. Imagine sending that as a text. How effective do you think that's going to be? Versus me sitting here saying, Hamid, listen, your blood work came back. Although I'm not a scaremonger, you are currently on the pathway down towards type 2 or pre-diabetes based on XYZ. We need to action this. What do you think we can do about this immediately? That's effective. And that gets you the right type of patient. That gets you someone who's going to be able to change. So the human touch has made it so much better and easier to stand out in a world where everybody is trying to look exactly the same.
Everybody in the world right now is trying to target everyone around the world, as you say.
Grasping on straws.
For someone to do something unperson, the client has to be in the place that you live.
Correct.
So how do you exactly communicate with the client that's in the other side of the world in this case?
We've been very fortunate that the impacts that we've made up until now have literally brought people to our doorstep.
So they come to you rather than you going to them?
Yes.
How do you convince them?
First of all, the ease of business that Dubai provides, without trying to be funny about it. This country is phenomenal in that sense. I've not found anything yet. Having functioned in different countries, I've not found a place that if you come here wanting to better yourself or grow or utilize the facilities, as long as you don't infringe on what's been laid out for you, you can create and build anything here, which has been great. Everyone around the world knows that too, by the way. So
it's becoming a realization that, remember when they say, used to say, if you go to America, it was the American dream. Now we see Dubai as the Dubai dream.
It's not even the Dubai dream. Dubai's awake, my friend. It's not sleeping like the rest of the world. So long story short, we've got a lot of English patients. It is, and I'm not going to name organizations, but those of you who know, know, it is easier. It's difficult to get vitamin C in other countries. But if you come out here, you sit with a qualified practitioner, you will get routed with your blood work to the correct IV. Okay, cool. This isn't adding up. Let's try this testing. No need to wait 3.5 months. Quick story. I had a patient came over from England, severely compromised iron health, severely compromised gut, mineral imbalance, excessive cortisol, blood sugar was just really up the wall. He had hemorrhoids for 6 years. And I'm talking, this is a 26-year-old kid. He had to wait 6 months to get a procedure done in the UK. So we brought him over, we corrected him, and he went back home. And then all the work that we had done over a 6-week period that he spent here was reversed because of the inefficiency of another country's medical system.
So your client actually spent 6 weeks right here?
Yeah, dude, it happens all
the whole time.
Yeah. No, they come here. They
didn't just come for a few days.
I'm telling you, we had another patient who spent, I think I told you briefly, $2 million. I mean, $2 million traveling around the world to different places, Mexico, Austria, Switzerland, you name it, Timbuktu, going to all these holistic clinics, promising XYZ, social media, blah, 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 try this, try this. My wife realized, you know, she asked her, when was the last time you, she had worms, parasites, which is not spoken about either because that's a
different episode. Where did the parasites
come? That's like a different episode altogether. Yeah. But I mean, parasites exist everywhere. Worms exist everywhere. Your kid goes to school, you know, they ruffle the hair, they've got dogs walking around. Worms, we decompose. When we go to the earth, we decompose. Some are beneficial, some are obviously aggressive. So what happens is these parasites are found in, you have your, you know, your lovely $500 Wagyu steak. That's medium rare. It's got a good amount of hookworms in it. It's beautiful. So long story short, she had traveled and she'd moved around and been everywhere. And she was diagnosed with the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Fatty eyeball syndrome.
What does that even mean?
Habibi, you tell me. I've never in my life heard of fatty eyeball syndrome. And we've heard some really weird things. Like, I've come across some really, being like a private medicine practitioner, it's been incredible the stories that we've heard, but and the things that we've seen. So what happened was her worms were effectively moving into her ovaries at that point where they were.
So the real life actual
worms, my friend, like Alien versus Predator stuff, oh, like worms. So my wife Tora goes, when was the last time you were dewormed? She says, no, we don't do that in America. We don't do that in the States. So 28 dirham, right? Two tablets. Gone. $2 million worth of debt. Like all that money spent for nothing.
And so wait, the doctors in America couldn't actually diagnose this
America,
person.
Austria, Switzerland, Mexico.
And it only take 28 dirhams to fully cure her.
There's a blood level in our panels that we do that's called eosinophils. That is directly attached to any opportunistic organism, any type of parasite or worm for that matter. If I see an elevation in eosinophils, I know for a fact that the person has an infection that's stemming from parasites or just otherwise gut related. The thing is, when they do stool samples and it comes back inconclusive, let me put it to you this way. If you are a home invader and you're breaking into the house, are you going to make yourself a bowl of popcorn and sit in their lounge and watch TV and wait for them to come home? No, you're going to hide. You're going to wait until they go to sleep and you're going to eat their food, right? The parasites and the worms live in the upper tract of the intestinal area. So when you do a stool sample, it's getting removed from the lower area. You're not going to find any worms there. Why would they live? They've evolved longer than we've been alive, essentially, if you look at, you know, just basic, you know, growth and everything. They live in the upper section where they can eat all of your food and not experience any threats. So they're not going to live in the bottom where you get removed from the small intestine. So when they look, no, negative, not always the case. Sometimes, if you find worms in the lower intestinal tract, this basically means that you were hyper-infested.
Mm. So do you think it's mostly coming because they're eating undercooked meat?
Can be, or we travel. We've got a big problem with worms in this country because everyone travels to Thailand, to Bali, and they eat the street food. Like I said, pets, animals generally have worms. You walk in a mall and you touch the railings, and you scratch your nose. We have a very interesting case that happened. I'll tell you really quickly. I know you have other questions, but this sort of brings a full circle. So we had Canadians and they're like, there's no way my kid has worms. There's no way. Absolutely. There's no chance. I'm like, okay, tonight do me a favor. Wait for your 10-year-old kid to go to sleep. And when he's asleep, just lower his pants and just have a look at his buttocks area. Tell me what you see.
Worm coming out. No way.
Dude, they come out of you at night and they lay eggs on the crack area, like your anus, that area there. Yeah, you see your kid walking around scratching his bum and then he touches something. That's how they spread. So they physically come out at night.
I've heard of that story once. But now, with all those things, I'm sure you shared a lot of information. How does one person improve their overall health with first step? What's the first step?
The first step for them is more so, it sounds more esoteric, but they've got to decide that it's not a dopamine fix that they're after. They're not looking to just buy the gym membership and put it on their key card and feel good, but never really go. So a lot of people have the intention, but they don't have the follow through. Getting your blood work done, first of all, is always the best way to see what's under the hood.
Full checkup.
I would, man, can I tell you honestly, just unless you have pre-existing conditions that are so apparent in terms of like your leg is swelling to this extent, then we go for a Doppler scan to see if blood flow is restricted or if you have a deep vein thrombosis or a blood clot, if you will. But just a blood work check without being sent around too much is more than enough to get started with. Then you map yourself out and then you come up with realistic expectations. If it's taking you 10 years to get to this point, understand it's going to take you anywhere between 6 months to a year to really be optimized. But healing wise, we've experienced the biggest healing within 4 to 6 weeks. And I'm talking phenomenal healing.
Now, when it comes to blood tests, a lot of the times I myself, for example, take a blood test. They look at your result and say, you're fine.
Mm-hmm. Fine based on the reference range of the guy who's sitting on the couch eating Cheetos.
Exactly.
And then
so also, how do you go to someone who's really going to be paying attention to more than just the numbers and look at how I'm actually feeling? Maybe I'm fine on the paper, but I feel tired. I feel exhausted. I feel sleepy.
If you are someone, say, for instance, coming to me with a flu virus, right? Or you think that you're getting frequent colds, what they'll do is they'll do a complete blood count, which just checks your white and red blood cells, and that's it. You need fully comprehensive blood counts done. Now, medical insurance is really cool, but the problem is it's limited because they only want to pay for a certain extent. So they won't give you the full picture. They'll test for what the doctor's requisition in that point. Doctors today being very busy, so I can't fault them. They don't have the time to dig into bespoke health the way that it needs to be. In the 50s, doctors used to walk outside the office and come meet the patient and shake their hands and say, how are you? How's your husband, John, doing? Blah, blah, blah. Let's go sit down. That doesn't exist anymore. They're very constrained based on what they can and cannot do. Understandably so, keeping quality control in check. But also with that careful approach, there's no cowboy stuff being done to really dig deep. So for you to find out what's really going on, you need to do a fully comprehensive check that checks at least all 160 markers. And it doesn't have to be super expensive. This is another reason why I love this country, because we've got clinics that you literally say, I've got a patient coming to you. My name is Raymond Berger. I'm a clinician. Can we please design a package? So we've got the vital element package. It covers everything I need as a clinician to see what's going on to draw the pathology.
Now, when it comes to exactly the simple habits, what type of simple habits people should add in their lives?
When you wake up, before you turn on the coffee machine, 750 mils of water, hydration powder.
750 in the morning. Yep. Just for that morning.
Yep. You will not understand what that does for your system. It is ridiculous. It's like taking a petrified sponge that lives outside and then putting it in water and seeing it live. We're made of more than 70% water. So when you put coffee in, not only do you immediately, or any caffeine for that extent, within the first hour, unless you're training really early, that's a different thing. But if you put in caffeine immediately, you dehydrate yourself further, you stop mineral absorption, and then you rev up processes that aren't ready. And you literally throw, if you've heard of cortisol, you must have heard of cortisol, the stress hormone. You rev that up, you release extra glucose, and then it puts your system under stress, therefore increasing adrenal fatigue. And everyone thinks that it's their job that's causing adrenal fatigue, that it's their commitments. If you start in the morning by just hydrating instead of chucking caffeine down your throat, you're already 30% better than you were when you woke up. Those little wins. And finding out what works for you. If you are struggling with a solid meal, you need to try and understand why you can't have that in the morning, because that's not right. We're meant to eat food. We're not meant to chuck a protein shake with moringa powder down our throat first thing in the morning. It's supposed to be a solid meal. And my honest recommendation to those who can, and those who, I don't want to offend any vegans or anything, but eggs, steak, veggies, first thing in the morning, come talk to me about
steak in the morning.
Beef mince, if it's easier, but steak with a nice piece of fat on it. Come show me your blood work in a couple of weeks and tell me what your energy's like after just doing that. Hydrating with electrolytes, a bit of glutamine, and believe it or not, creatine for brain function. And then having steak, egg, and spinach, sort of like 40 minutes after that. You'll be a different person.
That's a sound advice.
That's good.
What about for young individuals? What do you think you would suggest for them?
Understand that your clock is working for you and not against you. Understand that the principles and the levels that you set for yourself and the standards that you set for yourself in your 20s and your 30s, that rockets you forward into the rest of your life. You're in a state of hormesis where cells are improving. Beyond that, if you don't look after yourself, your cell's going to a process of senescence, which is breakdown. Would you rather set things in place that have you go forward and improve, or would you rather have to come on later in life and stop senescence and then improve, which takes a longer time? So if you're in your 20s, have fun, do your thing. You don't have to live like a saint, but understand that you've got to do 80% good, 20% off. Live. Like I said, you can't start, it's no good story starts with a salad, but be active. Try and at least maintain 30 to 40 minutes of exercise 3 times a week. It doesn't have to be what you read on social media. Oh, if I'm not doing box jumps, then I'm not achieving anything. Oh, I'm not lifting 45 minutes a day, 5 days a week, so I'm discouraged. Oh, my friends are doing this, I'm not. It's none of that. Literally, before you had anyone else, you had yourself. Before you knew who your mother was, you were actual of your own self. You need to just do what's good for you and really make an effort. Don't just say, I've got all the years in my life to make a change. Start now so you don't have to do much later. A skill that is developed initially is difficult, but to maintain that skill going forward is a lot easier.
So the final advice is to basically start now.
Don't waste time. Except. Besides, what a shame it is that a human being should live their whole life not knowing what their actual true capabilities is. The definition of hell to me would be to die one day and meet my maker and alongside him see the version that I could have been. Where would that ever leave you in terms of regret? Don't let that be the case.
Yeah, and you've been gifted the gift of a really well, great health that you have.
2 arms.
Use it well. Optimize it. Make it better.
Exactly. You got people with no legs running marathons, for goodness sake. What's your excuse?
Sure. Well, due to the short time, I just wanted to say with my last question, how can people reach out to you since you have no social media? How do they reach out to you?
We've got our handle. They're more than welcome. The group hasn't actually been active and stuff, but it's on social media. You'll have on Instagram. We are known as Vital Elements. So you'll be able to find our website, link to the bio there with a bunch of information.
Can you spell it out?
About it? Yeah. VitalElement. Vital Elements. So it's got a nice V with a green background.
This is on Instagram? Or?
Yes, on Instagram, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a pleasure to have you here, Raymond.
Thank you so much.
I think people got a lot of things from you.
Yeah, well, hopefully, whatever. As long as you can contribute, then you've done your thing in life.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.